Today is Thursday, April 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. The WHO says COVID-19 is going to be with us for a long time.
One of the greatest dangers we face now is complacency.
Plus, what's it like to be on the front lines against the fight of COVID-19 in rural South Africa?
We still seem to get an explosion of patients on a daily basis. Trying to keep all the staff calm, as every sneeze that comes into the door and every cough is a potential risk for all of us.
Those stories and more are next. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the coronavirus outbreak is fast becoming a human rights crisis. Guterres called on governments to ensure healthcare is available and accessible to all people, that economic aid packages help those most affected, and that everyone has the ability to obtain food, water, and housing. World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus on Wednesday warned there is a long road to go and COVID-19 will be with us for a long time.
Early evidence suggests most of the world's population remains susceptible. That means epidemics can easily reignite. One of the greatest dangers we face now is complacency. People in countries with stay-at-home orders are understandably frustrated with being confined to their homes for weeks on end. People understandably want to get on with their lives because their lives and livelihoods are at stake. That's what WHO wants to, and that's what we're working for all day, every day. But the world will not and cannot go back to the way things were. There must be a new normal, a world that's healthier, safer, and better prepared.
While state governors in the United States are making plans to lift business restrictions, it's not clear how many Americans are ready to leave their homes with the threat of the virus still looming. The AP's Jackie Quinn takes things from here.
The chief White House economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, says he expects the way for businesses to bring back customers will be for them to advertise to the public about their safety measures. He says the White House is considering liability protection for employers in case workers or customers do fall sick. A Harvard University professor of health policy, Dr. Robert Blendon, says history with the SARS outbreak has shown it could take weeks, even months, for people to feel confident resuming normal activities. Officials have already warned that masks, gloves, and social distancing will continue in public places. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
U.S. health officials are also urging the public to look ahead to the next flu season and get flu shots in order to help mitigate a potential huge strain on health resources if there are a large number of flu and coronavirus patients at the same time. But the head of a U.S. government agency fighting the coronavirus pandemic says he's been pushed out for opposing the malaria drug U.S. President Donald Trump advocated for as a virus remedy. The AP's Sagar Magani has more.
Rick Bright says he was removed from his job leading the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority this week. Bright says he limited the broad use of hydroxychloroquine, which the president repeatedly pushed as a game changer, with no proof the drug actually works against the virus. Asked about Bright yesterday,
"You just mentioned a name, I never heard of him."
Bright's lawyers insist his removal was retaliation, plain and simple.
"If the guy says he was pushed out of a job, maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. You'd have to hear the other side. I don't know who he is."
Bright says he's speaking out because science has to lead the fight against the virus, not politics or cronyism. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said all members of the WHO should support a review into the origins of the coronavirus pandemic.
"We will need an independent inquiry that looks at what has occurred here so we can learn the lessons. Now, there will be debates about the timing of that. We are in the middle of dealing with the pandemic right now, and I understand some of the hesitations that have been expressed about the timing of that particular inquiry."
China's foreign ministry responded by saying Australia's call for an independent probe was political maneuvering and said the country should end its ideological bias. In addition, China announced it will give another $30 million to the World Health Organization to help in the global fight against the coronavirus pandemic, days after Washington said it would freeze funding. The United States, which is the WHO's biggest contributor, accused the organization last week of mismanaging the COVID-19 crisis. The first cases of the novel coronavirus were confirmed in Wuhan, China. Hsi Ming lives there and has been tested 3 times for COVID-19. And each of those times, the tests came back negative, despite He having symptoms. But as Reuters reporter Gloria So explains, it looks like he did actually have the virus.
The x-rays of 52-year-old Wuhan resident Hsi Ming show white blotches all over his lungs, similar to patterns found on the lungs of coronavirus patients. Doctors told him this wasn't COVID-19, but it turns out the 3 tests he took were all false negatives. That's despite what he calls smothering chest congestion since February. The nucleic acid test, or throat swab, is the main way coronavirus cases are detected. He didn't challenge the false results. His wife wasn't sick. But he felt awful.
The feeling was like I'm dying. You can't imagine how it feels if you've never experienced it, not even if I tell you.
His unusual case is not unique. Similar reports of false negative cases have fueled concerns over the accuracy of coronavirus testing. And if tests are unreliable, that could not only undermine efforts to stop the virus, but foil attempts to open up the world's lockdown economies. When He had been sick for over a month and traditional Chinese medicine didn't help, he got tested a 4th and final time on March 28th, this time both by throat swab and antibody test. The throat swab came back negative yet again, but the test for virus antibodies proved to be positive, showing that He had indeed been exposed to the coronavirus.
People say it is a miracle that I survived from it. I bought the medicine myself and I didn't get sent to the hospital. What if I took the medicine and it had no effect and then I died?
Wuhan authorities have started testing residents for antibodies, as experts say the usual throat swab isn't always effective if too small a sample is taken or if the swab misses the virus hit spot. A survey by Chinese doctors in February, looking at samples from over 200 patients, suggested a false negative rate of around 30%. He says he doesn't know how many people like him are still out there. He believes he's now immune and not infectious, but he still feels the after effects of the virus even now.
It makes me feel unwell occasionally, an uncomfortable feeling, but I'm strong. Like when I felt uncomfortable riding to pick up my vegetables in the morning, I thought of returning home. But then I thought, I need to get on with my life, and I still went on.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. South Africa's pharmacists are often overlooked as frontline healthcare workers in the fight against Africa's worst outbreak of the coronavirus, despite frequently being the first in contact with those showing symptoms. In the rural town of Mokopane, in South Africa's northern Limpopo province, pharmacist Bronwyn van Heerden and her colleagues provide medicine to hundreds of patients each day. Reporter Maryse de Klerk brings us van Heerden's story, told in her own words.
We've tried as far as possible to keep everybody safe. We're working in different teams, rotating on a weekly basis, with only 2 pharmacies running. But we still seem to get an explosion of patients on a daily basis. Trying to keep all the staff calm, as every sneeze that comes into the door and every cough is a potential risk for all of us. We've put up Perspex, along with the danger tape, between us and the patients. We've put stickers on the floor so that people can see where they must stand. But everybody is still scared. Every time somebody coughs in the pharmacy, everybody looks around, and everybody is oblivious of what's going on outside. Many people that are standing queuing, waiting to come into the pharmacy. It's not diminishing. People are there all day long, from morning to night. Hopefully this will end, and hopefully people will start realizing the dangers and keep to their quarantines, keep out of the public, and keep at home. To stay and keep everybody else safe.
And coming up later,
some of the top names in hip-hop music are teaming up in a live stream event to raise money for New York City healthcare workers and to raise awareness about stopping the spread of COVID-19.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. One of the most destructive volcanic eruption events in recent history took place when Hawaii's Kilauea erupted from early May through early September 2018. A new study from researchers at the University of Miami in Florida suggests that the 2018 eruption was likely triggered by extended and occasionally extreme rainfall in the months prior to the event. Using rainfall measurements, the researchers examined the fluid pressure within the volcano structure over time, which they say is a factor that can affect the chances for mechanical failure in the ground subsurface, driving volcanic activity. They found that fluid pressure at the site just before the eruption was at its highest in almost half a century, and proposed that this expedited movement of magma beneath the volcano. The U.S. Geological Survey says about 22 square kilometers of land was flooded by lava during the event. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Make a difference by honoring ordinary people doing extraordinary things to help one another. VOA encourages you to tell us about everyday people who have shown leadership in your communities during the coronavirus crisis. Submit your nominations to VOA Leaders at voanews.com. Send us your name, phone number, and email, and a VOA reporter will contact you. We're all in this together.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, held an extraordinary session Thursday. To learn more, I spoke with journalist Nicolas Pinault via WhatsApp in Paris.
Well, this meeting, Mohamed Issoufou, the president of Niger, is also the chairman of ECOWAS, and he's going to mention especially how the states are going to be able to keep the same standards and same protocols and same procedures to fight the pandemic on a continent. It is also important to note that Moussa Faki Mahamat, the president of the African Union Commission, is due to attend. So is Dr. Mohamed Mchambas, the special representative of the UN Secretary General for West Africa. And I think it's very important to mention that, of course, they're going to talk about the economic measures to try to help member states to deal with the current virus. But also, you have to remember that 6 years ago, during the Ebola crisis, it's during one of this meeting between the heads of state that they created the West African Health Organization. So it's very important to mention that they might come up with a new structure to deal with that pandemic in West Africa.
When are we going to know what the outcome of the meeting is?
Well, it's a virtual one, so it is ongoing right now, and the conclusion of this meeting should happen anytime this Thursday.
What about other activities ECOWAS is undertaking?
Well, I think also we have to remember the alarm set last week by ECOWAS regarding the impact of this pandemic, as this pandemic could increase the number of people at risk of food insecurity and malnutrition from 17 million right now to 15 million between June and August. So I think it's also important to mention that economic measures, it's very important, but right now we're dealing with hunger and also with a risk of fatalities because of hunger in the region. So I think the member states, they're going to stress that during the meeting.
Nicolas Pinault is a journalist based out of Paris, France. Bangladesh's foreign minister said it will not accept two boats said to be carrying hundreds of starving Rohingya refugees. The new controversy over stranded Rohingya comes a week after dozens starved to death on a boat that was left at sea for 2 months before it could land. Activists are fearful that large numbers of Rohingya, a persecuted Muslim minority, mostly from Buddhist Myanmar, may be trapped on boats and unable to reach other countries. Two former members of Syria's secret police go on trial Thursday in Germany, accused of crimes against humanity. The trial is the first time that two representatives of the Syrian government face trial abroad for war crimes allegedly committed during the country's years-long civil war. One defendant is accused of overseeing a detention center where thousands of opposition protesters were tortured. The second is accused of detaining protesters and bringing them to a jail where they were then mistreated. At least 9 torture victims will be represented as co-plaintiffs in the case that is expected to last several months. Iran said it will destroy U.S. warships if Tehran's security is threatened in the Gulf after President Donald Trump authorized the U.S. Navy to shoot and destroy any and all Iranian gunboats if they harass U.S. ships in the Persian Gulf. VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi spoke with David DeRoche, associate professor at the National Defense University in Washington, about the president's order.
I think it is a warning of sorts. What it's saying is that the close proximity that Iran went into there and the forbearance that American forces have shown is not something that Iran can rely on, and that they shouldn't take this as the new normal. What Trump is trying to do is show strength. At the same time, he wants to let Iran know very clearly that if they come close to naval ships, they can't rely on having a passive response.
While no country in the Middle East has been hit as hard as Iran with coronavirus outbreak, last week a group of 11 Iranian fast boats repeatedly harassed 6 Navy ships in the Gulf and came within 10 yards of a U.S. Navy ship. Can you explain that?
Yeah, the Iranian regime has distracted its people from its record of inefficiency and corruption. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard hopes that if it defies the United States, the Iranian people will forget the incompetent response of the Revolutionary Guard and the mullahs to the coronavirus and the shooting down of a civilian airliner in Tehran.
President Trump's warning came as Iran successfully launched a military satellite, which prompted Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to demand that United Nations Security Council hold Iran responsible for potential violation of the international guidelines restricting Tehran's nuclear-capable missiles program. What's your take on that?
This is the first one they said explicitly was military. They've overstated the capabilities of the missile that did it. Again, trying to get the Americans' attention, trying to bolster the support of people in the United States who are arguing that sanctions against Iran have to be lifted. At the end of the day, this is a trivial development, but it does reinforce the hardline position, which is, look, Iran is crawling to the IMF for a loan. And, you know, if they've got money to do this kind of foolishness, which is provocative and violation of UN sanctions, why should the countries of the West loan them money?
So how does Iran finance such a costly project when the United States is squeezing its income or revenue from oil and the sanctions are still on?
Yeah, that's a good question. So they finance it at the expense of the development of their people and their infrastructure. One of the paradoxes of sanction in the short term is that when you apply sanctions on a repressive authoritarian regime or a corrupt regime, and Iran is all three of these things, the people in power get a larger portion of a shrinking pie. So even as the Iranian economy contracts, even as Iranians are left without jobs or without health care, the Revolutionary Guard will still find the money to send their children living in Spain with Ferraris, as we picture of, and to finance these military ventures.
David DeRoche is an associate professor at the National Defense University in Washington. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Yemen is a country drowning in silence, with journalists and media organizations under constant threat of harassment, arrest, torture, and now even death. Yemeni journalists say as violence and famine deepen their civil war, reporters are in even more danger, and many are now abandoning the profession. Heather Murdoch has more.
About 2 weeks ago, 4 journalists were sentenced to death in Yemen after 5 years in prison. They were tried in a court set up by the Houthis, the group that rules northern Yemen and is at war with the internationally recognized government in the south. Free press has deteriorated significantly since the Houthis' rise to power in 2015, says Justin Shalad, a senior researcher for the Committee to Protect Journalists.
The Houthis are pretty, like, there's not really even lip service paid to the idea of freedom of the press. And I think that this death sentence, in a way, is is really kind of the proof of that.
He says usually when authorities want to silence journalists, they accuse them of terrorism or inciting violence. However, in northern Yemen right now, just being a journalist is suspect. He adds, though, journalists have also been harassed, abducted, and beaten in areas controlled by the internationally recognized government and killed by Saudi airstrikes. They have also been caught in the crossfire. Hassam Al-Qadesi is a Yemeni journalist in the capital, Sana'a. He says many reporters are leaving the profession and looking for jobs as laborers. They believe that a free press is important for a free society, he says. But right now, the risks are too great. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
Some of the top names in hip-hop music are teaming up in a live stream event to raise money for New York City healthcare workers and to raise awareness about stopping the spread of COVID-19. VOA's David Byrd has those details.
They are some of the preeminent artists in hip-hop. Ice-T, Chuck D, Curtis Blow, The Sugar Hill Gang, Ja Rule, Big Daddy Kane, De La Soul, and Naughty by Nature. Thursday, they and other stars join in Hip Hop Loves New York, a three-hour perform-a-thon on entertainment company Mass Appeal's YouTube channel to honor and to raise money for New York City healthcare workers. The event was the brainchild of a curator at the Universal Hip Hop Museum in the Bronx. Rocky Buchano is the museum's executive director.
And we reached out to a few hip-hop artists, some DJs, to produce a three-hour benefit, online benefit, that's going to be live-streamed. When we contacted the various artists that we reached out to, one by one, they each thought it was a great idea and wanted to immediately support the cause.
Veteran rapper Ice-T was one of those who immediately said he would participate.
I have a lot of friends that have contacted the virus, Scarface being one of the famous ones from Ghetto Boys went through it. I've had a lot of people that I know through people that have actually passed away. And I'm taking it serious. Scarface told me straight up, he said, Ice, you don't want this. You don't want a part of it. Felt like I was coughing up razor blades.
Vinnie Brown of the group Naughty by Nature experienced COVID-19 symptoms in March when he lost his sense of taste and smell. Brown says hip-hop has a unique ability to reach people.
We know how big of a bullhorn hip-hop has and our community and culture as a whole has. I do see our community mobilizing right now, you know? Everyone's talking about health regimens. Everyone's talking about changing their diets. Everyone is talking about just changing for the better, and I know that's going to happen.
Rocky Buchano of the Universal Hip Hop Museum says the goal is threefold: to raise awareness about the sacrifices and needs of healthcare workers, to draw attention to the need for healthcare and economic relief in underserved communities, and to encourage people that social distancing, hand washing, and other preventative measures will work. Rapper Ice-T says it's important that people take mitigation measures seriously.
We can turn the tide in our community being like, yo, you ain't got on your mask. You out here playing around the streets like it's all good. You are, you know, like they say, somebody who has the coronavirus and isn't telling anybody, that's like the guy that got bit by the zombie and hides the bite. You know what I'm saying? Right.
Ja Rule says that he hopes the performances give people some much-needed relief from the stress of the pandemic.
If we could get out and just get everybody together for an hour or however long it is, 2 hours or whatever, just take everybody's minds off it and have a little bit of fun, I think that's what people are really looking for, you know, just a little escape right now, you know?
Rocky Buchano of the Universal Hip Hop Museum agrees.
And we want people to have fun. We want them to put their anxieties and their fears away for 3 hours, enjoy some of the best hip hop artists in the world, and just, see the positivity that can come out of this crisis.
Video Music Box creator Ralph Daniels will host the event. Donations will benefit the Somos Community Cares Group, a network of more than 2,500 healthcare providers throughout the New York metro area, and the Bronx Community Relief Effort, which focuses on meeting essential needs in the Bronx caused by the coronavirus pandemic. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.